amid this genocidal war on the territory. Major international aid groups slam Western countries for providing weapons to Israel, saying they are complicit in the regime's genocide in Gaza. And the Hamas resistance movement once again says any ceasefire must end the Israeli onslaught on Gaza and lead to the pullout of its forces. Thank you for joining us. Nearly 6 months into the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, and the regime keeps pressing ahead with its onslaught across the besieged strip. Some 62 Palestinians have been killed and scores more injured in Israeli airstrikes and shelling over the past 24 hours. The regime's forces also continued with their aerial raids on the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. They say that the majority of these attacks were focused on the Al-Amal neighborhood, leaving a number of people dead. Meanwhile, Palestinian fighters are putting stiff resistance to Israeli troops on the ground in some areas. They have attacked Israeli soldiers and vehicles with mortars in eastern and southern parts of Gaza City. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, the death toll from the Israeli war has now topped 33,000. Over 75,600 Palestinians have also been wounded, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. International medical charity Doctors Without Borders has accused Israel of deliberately and systematically destroying Gaza's healthcare system. A senior MSF official said deadly attacks on medical and humanitarian staff indicate either Israel's deliberate intent to destroy the territory's health sector or its reckless incompetence. Amber Alayan added that Gaza's hospitals are grappling with levels of carnage on a daily basis that no healthcare system in the world can cope with. She said the vast majority of the injuries in Gaza are explosive injuries caused by the regime's bombardment of homes. She emphasized that no amount of field hospitals can replace the healthcare system that existed in Gaza before the Israeli onslaught. The head of the charity organization Doctors Without Borders has slammed the Israeli regime for the, quote, deliberate attack on aid workers. Christopher Lockyer was referring to an Israeli strike on Monday that killed seven international aid workers associated with a US-based charity World Central Kitchen in the Gaza Strip. Let's take a listen.
Humanitarian workers are protected. No ifs, no buts. We do not accept the narrative of regrettable incidents. We do not accept it because what has happened to World Central Kitchen and MSF's convoys and shelters is part of the same pattern of deliberate attacks on humanitarians, health workers, journalists, UN personnel, schools and homes. This is not just about implementing an effective deconfliction mechanism. Our movements and locations are shared, coordinated and identified already. This is about impunity, a total disregard for the laws of war, and now it must become about accountability. It not only shows the failure of deconfliction measures, it shows the futility of these measures in a war fought with no rules. That these attacks on humanitarian workers are allowed to happen is a political choice. Israel faces no political cost. Instead, its allies enable this brutality with impunity and provide even more weapons that maim and kill civilians indiscriminately.
Major international aid groups have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They say countries that are arming Israel are also obliged under international law to protect the people from the regime's, quote, atrocity crimes. The aid groups, including Oxfam and Save the Children, also slammed the Israeli regime for restricting aid delivery into Gaza, saying it's now almost impossible to work in the besieged territory. Meanwhile, the president of the medical charity Doctors Without Borders blasted the West for arming Israel. Isabel DeForney said the US, Britain and France are complicit in what is going on in Gaza, which amounts to genocide. She said Israel is waging war on an entire population, which is trapped, deprived of food and massively bombed. She added that Gaza is progressively being made unfit for human life and has passed the threshold of absolute horror. Author and journalist Robert Fantina believes that Israel does not want a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli government doesn't want a ceasefire agreement of any kind because that would prevent them from slaughtering the rest of the population of Gaza and being able to annex the Gaza Strip, which is what they want to do. They will continue to annihilate the people there, to destroy the infrastructure, all under the myth of protecting themselves from what they refer to as an existential threat. It is Palestine, not Israel, that is facing an existential threat. But that's exactly why the Israeli government will not move towards a ceasefire, because they want to end Palestine, and a major step in doing that is annexing Gaza. And in order to do that, they have to destroy the people of Gaza or drive them out into Egypt, into refugee camps, as was done 75 years ago. And most of those people have been unable to return, despite the international guarantee that they can. But Israel has never been a reasonable partner in so-called negotiations, which are ridiculous. And it's not a reasonable partner now in looking for a ceasefire, because a ceasefire is not its goal. Israel knows that whatever it wants to do, the United States will back it financially and diplomatically and militarily. This is a policy of the United States that has been ongoing for decades that makes no sense. The United States is coming down again on the wrong side of history and will be associated with genocide for decades and decades to come.
A senior Hamas representative in Lebanon has slammed the Israeli atrocities in the Gaza Strip, calling on Palestinians to escalate the acts of resistance against the regime.
A proof of the unity and cohesion of our people around the option of resistance as a only legitimate means for liberation and return. And we call for this to continue and to further escalate this resistance against the enemy and against the settlers. The blatant crime committed by the Zionist enemy against the Al-Shifa medical compound and the medical teams and the unarmed civilians and ill and those who were with them and the displaced in the hospital and in the surroundings of the hospital over a period of 2 weeks will continue to witness the brutality and savagery of this enemy.
Osama Hamdan said in a press conference that all plans of the enemy against Gaza will be destroyed in the face of Palestinian resistance. He also mentioned the Israeli attack on charity workers in Gaza, saying that the strike shows the depth of Israel's brutality as the regime keeps violating all international norms and laws. The senior Hamas official condemned the continued U.S. support for Israel, saying that Washington is responsible for Tel Aviv's crimes against Palestinians. On the notion of talks for a possible ceasefire, he stressed that any deal must lead to an end to the onslaught on Gaza and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the territory. Speaking on the eve of the International Quds Day, Hamdan called for worldwide rallies in solidarity with the Palestinian people. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has held prayers over the bodies of the 7 Iranian military advisers killed in Israel's Monday attack on Iran's embassy in Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei prayed over the bodies after meeting with the families of the martyrs. The bodies arrived in Tehran from the Syrian capital earlier on Thursday. The official funeral ceremony will be held on Friday, which coincides with the International Quds Day. The Israeli attack killed 2 senior Iranian military commanders and 5 accompanying officers who were on an advisory mission to Syria. The United States has approved the transfer of thousands of additional bombs to Israel as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war in Gaza. A new report citing a Biden administration official says the package, which was approved this week, includes over 2,000 unguided and 1,000 small diameter bombs. According to the report, the munitions will come from previously authorized supplies and are not slated for delivery before 2025. Last month, the U.S. State Department authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel. Reports say Washington has quietly made more than 100 weapon sales to Tel Aviv since the regime's onslaught on Gaza began early last October. The arms supplies fly in the face of the U.S. call for a ceasefire in Gaza and amid increasing international outcry over Israel's heinous crimes across the territory. Yemen's Ansarullah leader says the United States is complicit in Israel's genocide in Gaza by providing the regime with weapons, experts, and intelligence. Speaking in a televised speech on the eve of the International Quds Day, Abdul Malik al-Houthi said U.S.'s uninterrupted arms shipments to Israel have exposed its hypocrisy on Gaza. He added that Washington shares the regime's criminal intention to kill off Palestinians. Houthi said Israel has received the largest American military aid since World War II. He also slammed certain Arab states for their failure to support Palestinians and their cooperation with Israel. Without naming such states, he said some of them are even complicit in Israeli crimes by providing aid and goods to the regime. Al-Houthi also called on Yemenis to pour into the streets in their millions to mark this year's Quds Day on Friday. He emphasized that Yemen's stance on supporting the Palestinian people will never change. International Quds Day is an annual pro-Palestinian event marked on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. The day was designated by the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, in 1979 in solidarity with Palestinians. People worldwide will mark this year's Quds Day on the coming Friday. Our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh, has asked some Lebanese people about the event and its importance in the Muslim world. Let's take a listen.
On Al-Quds Day, we salute the man who established it, Imam Khomeini. God bless his soul. We also salute the courageous Iranian people, and we give our condolences to Iran for the recent assassination of their great leaders, who were martyred at the time of Al-Quds Day and on the path of Al-Quds. This is evidence that Al-Quds Day, that was declared by Imam Khomeini, has blossomed and is beginning to be fruitful, with signs of near victory getting nearer to Al-Quds Day as Al-Aqsa Mosque. As Palestinians, we feel that we are closer today to Al-Quds. Every year, we used to take part in the protests and events of International Quds Day, but this year is different.
Ever since it was declared by Imam Khomeini and it was commemorated by factions and peoples, it accumulated over the years and has grown, and it became more and more significant and influential, and the number of people who took part in commemorating Al-Quds Day increased exponentially.
International Quds Day has not only been commemorated through media coverage, protests and seminars. It was actually realized in the year 2000 when the resistance fighters defeated the Israeli army, which was considered invincible. It was also realized in 2006 with the divine victory, which was realized at the hands of the resistance fighters in Lebanon, who dealt a heavy blow to this regime to question its existence. With Al-Aqsa flood, the courageous resistance fighters in Gaza reiterated the meaning of this day. It was declared as a day to be commemorated, but Imam Khomeini also declared it as part of a long path of liberating Palestine and Al-Quds.
This year we'll commemorate Al-Quds Day with a slogan which is noteworthy. The Flood of the Free is a slogan that is derived of the Al-Aqsa flood operation and the Israeli war on Gaza and the West Bank and Al-Quds, and it is a war that overshadows all other wars. This is a war launched by an enemy which is monstrous, untamed, and relentless in its killing and has no regard for any rules or laws or ethics or morals. This call to take part in God's Day and to strive for the liberation of Al-Quds is a religious duty of Muslims based on an initiative by the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini. It's also a humanitarian duty for all the free people of the world who support righteousness and the struggle facing oppression and tyranny and occupation.
Despite the tight Israeli security procedures, checkpoints, arrests, and aggressions against the people inside the city of Al-Quds, there is readiness on the part of our people there and inside the lands of 1948 and the West Bank to commemorate the International Quds Day. This is in harmony with the protests which are taking place in many capitals across the globe where people have expressed their need for freedom. And Al-Quds Day is a manner in which people express and fulfill that need, and they are all voicing their support for Gaza and Palestine.
Meanwhile, our Kabul correspondent Rahmatullah Baghwan has asked some Afghan people about the International Quds Day and its importance in the Muslim world. Let's take a listen.
Islamic teachings and values instruct us to unite. We are nearly 2 billion Muslims worldwide. If we all had made a collective decision about Quds and Palestine, the occupying Israeli regime could not have done what it did in Gaza. But unfortunately, some Muslim leaders serve as traitors. It's a big shame. We all must stand for Palestine and the Al-Quds and fight to free it.
All Muslims worldwide must hold this belief that those who are massacred in Gaza are their brothers and sisters. All Muslims must unite on the axis of Al-Quds and raise their voices in protest against Israel and in solidarity with Gazans. The last Friday of Ramadan provides a good opportunity when we all mark the International Quds Day. Quds is occupied and we are determined to free it.
The International Quds Day, which is designated by Imam Khomeini, serves as a day of solidarity with Palestinians. It's important because on this day, all freedom seekers globally rally behind Al-Quds and the people of Gaza. It's important especially today when we are facing a war of narratives and information through the media. We all must take part and do whatever we can to protest and condemn Israeli crimes and support oppressed Gazans.
On this coming Friday, I'll definitely take part in Al-Quds rallies and protests. I call on all Afghans to observe this day not as a political issue but as a human and Islamic cause. Let's come together and raise our voices so that Gaza gets freed from this Israeli oppression.
We all must extend our support and empathy for Gazans to prevent Israelis from continuing its oppression in Palestine. We pray that God help and bless all Muslims so that they become victorious over Israelis and save their Palestinian brothers.
On the eve of the International Quds Day, Iran once again calls for a referendum in the occupied Palestinian territories to resolve the century-old issue of the region. In a statement published online, Iran's foreign minister said Tehran believes that the Palestinian question should be resolved through a referendum amongst all original inhabitants of Palestine that includes Christians, Muslims, and Jews. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said lasting peace in the region can only be achieved by addressing the root causes of the problem. He noted that the Al-Aqsa flood operation was in response to Israel's 75 years of occupation and continuous crimes against Palestinians. Iran's top diplomat urged the international community and Muslim states to take practical steps to end Israeli crimes. He also blamed the US for the continuation of the war on Gaza and obstruction of efforts to end it. And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio. The Limelight.
A new report says the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to the Israeli regime in recent days, amid Israel's ongoing genocidal war against Palestinians of Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. English website of Tasnim News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. The United States has reaffirmed its commitment to arming Israel despite growing anger inside and outside of the United States over the regime's atrocities in the Gaza Strip. A spokesperson for the State Department, Matthew Miller, on Monday 1st of April defended recent U.S. arms transfers to Israel, which included fighter jets and 900-kilogram bombs. When asked whether the weapons transferred damaged the credibility and sincerity of U.S. statements slamming the killing of too many civilians in Gaza, Matthew Miller said, "I do not agree with that at all." Miller claimed, "We have been very clear that we want to see Israel do everything it can to minimize civilian casualties. We have made clear that they need to operate at all times in full compliance with international humanitarian law." The official also reaffirmed the United States' long-term commitment to what he called Israel's right to self-defense, despite growing concerns about rights abuses in the Gaza Strip. Critics say the U.S. policy of arming Israel violates American laws prohibiting military aid and weapons sales to regimes engaged in human rights abuses. Several progressive lawmakers have called on President Biden to end his unconditional support for the Israeli regime. Recently, Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley stressed that the United States is complicit in the atrocities being committed in the Gaza Strip. Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley wrote in a series of social media posts, "We must also recognize that America is complicit in this tragedy by resupplying Israel with bombs and failing to use America's leverage to increase aid delivered into Gaza." Reflecting on the admonition to feed the hungry and assist the stranger, and blessed are the peacemakers, let's push Team Biden to do better, more aid, and no more bombs. Despite pressure to withhold arms from the Israeli regime, a U.S. report said on Monday 1st of April that Washington is considering major new weapons sales to Israel. Citing a congressional aide and a person familiar with the issue, the website Politico said the package includes up to 50 new F-15 fighter jets, 30 AIM 120 advanced medium-range air-to-air missiles, and a number of Joint Direct Attack Munitions kits, which turn dumb bombs into precision-guided weapons. The digital newspaper said the deals are pending U.S. government approval, but noting that the administration has already informally notified the relevant congressional committees, the report said, that step typically means the administration is ready to move forward with the sale. The Washington Post has also covered the same story and tells us more. A new report says the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel in recent days, amid the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war against Palestinians of Gaza. Pentagon and the State Department said the new arms package includes more than 1,800 bombs. According to the report, these are 2,000-pound devices that can demolish entire city blocks and are rarely used in populated areas. However, the Zionist regime has used them extensively in the Gaza Strip. Some Democrats, including allies of President Biden, say the U.S. government has a responsibility to withhold weapons in the absence of an Israeli commitment to limit civilian casualties in Gaza. Senator Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat from Maryland, said in an interview, "The Biden administration needs to use their leverage effectively, and in my view, they should receive these basic commitments before greenlighting more bombs for Gaza." Senator Chris Van Hollen, Democrat from Maryland, added, "We need to back up what we say with what we do." Recently, the U.S. State Department authorized the transfer of 25 F-35 fighter jets and engines to the occupied Palestinian territories. Earlier reports said the United States had quietly made more than 100 weapon sales to Israel since the onslaught on Gaza began on 7th of October last year. The arms supplies go against the U.S. call for a ceasefire in Gaza. The Israeli regime began its hostilities in Gaza on 7th of October 2023 after the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas carried out Operation Al-Aqsa Storm against the usurping regime in retaliation for Israel's intensified atrocities against Palestinians. Israel has also cut off fuel, electricity, food and water to the more than 2 million Palestinian population of the Gaza Strip. Al Masira television channel has also reported on the same story and tells us more. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the U.S. administration of President Joe Biden is responsible for the crimes, massacres and systematic destruction of civilian life in the Gaza Strip. Hamas issued a statement on Monday, 1st of April, after the terrorist Israeli occupation army retreated from Gaza's Al-Shifa medical complex and its surroundings after a two-week siege of the hospital. It said Israel's savage acts against the health sector and hospitals in Gaza are carried out with American weaponry and all forms of military and political support from Washington. In a statement on Monday, 1st of April, Gaza's health ministry said Israeli forces have withdrawn tanks and vehicles from Al-Shifa Hospital after a two-week siege of the medical facility. It emphasized that Israel retreated from the hospital after burning down the complex buildings and putting it completely out of service. It added that Israel's horrific crimes in Al-Shifa Hospital revealed the nature of this rogue fascist regime, which does not follow the values of civilization and humanity. The Hamas statement criticized world bodies and the international community for remaining silent in the face of Israel's crimes, which are fully and unlimitedly supported by the Biden administration. Hamas called on the international community and the United Nations to forthrightly condemn Israel's atrocities at Al-Shifa Hospital, its surroundings, and the citizens who were being treated inside the facility. It also asked them to immediately enter Gaza City and look for themselves the scale of crimes being committed by Israel at that location. Hamas called on international judicial bodies, particularly the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to start procedures to investigate Israel's atrocities at Al-Shifa Hospital and its surroundings. It said international judicial bodies are required to carry out their mandated mission to hold the Israeli leaders accountable for their actions and bring them to justice. Hamas once again reiterated that Israeli crimes will not weaken the resolve of the steadfast Palestinian people, and the Palestinians will continue to confront the Israeli aggression. The statement added, "We call on the free people of the world and the masses of our Arab and Muslim nations to rise up to intensify their pressing movement against the savage enemy and its supporters, and provide all forms of support and backing to the Palestinians."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, old ladies from all around the world. Welcome back to your own program, Muslim Lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once again. Yes, welcome to your own program. As usual, we're going to talk about the issues that are related to all the women out there. And in today's episode, we have Sister Nahid with us to help us with the topics. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. I'm so glad and pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much for being here. How are you doing?
Good. Everything is going okay.
So that's perfect. Well, and we're in the holy month of Ramadan, so I ask everybody not to forget us from their prayers. Previously on Muslim Lady, we talked about the factors and important items that are very much crucial for every girl to take into notice and consideration before they get into the decision for marriage. Like, we went through the compatibility, like family approval, just I'm counting the things I remember. And right now, I guess there are some more of these factors that we can talk about.
Yeah, sure. The first factor for today, which I'm going to start with, is taking into account the cultural differences between the couples. Mm-hmm. Like, what I believe in is that both girl and boy, and especially girls, because sometimes based on their own nature, girls act at that moment, like act spontaneously without considering the side effects, like the factor that is very important, and sometimes we don't even think about it, is the cultural differences within the family, within the society. And most importantly, if people are from the different areas, like different locations, different countries.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's why in Islamic heritage, when they come to talk about marriage, as for girls, to support the girls, they say that the father's approval is very important.
Yeah.
Once when we were younger, actually, we had a problem with this. Why? Girls cannot decide for themselves. And then I remember we had a professor at a school. She came to just open it up for us to tell us why the fathers have to give their approval for the girl's marriage. And then she said that this is for the girl's benefit. Like, maybe you as girls are too emotional spontaneously, just as you said, you're going to make a decision. But your fathers are more experienced. They are men and they know their folk better. So maybe this is going to protect you from the consequences. Like, if you do not see things in a clear vision, your parent, specifically your father, is going to see things much more clearer.
And another thing is that it was at the time of the, I guess, the first years that feminism was being highlighted in the world.
Yeah.
At that time, people used to just disagree with all the rules and every rule that consisted of men, father, I don't know, brother.
Exactly.
The opposite gender.
Yeah.
And that was completely leading the society towards these negative ideas for like men and fathers.
Exactly.
And I really agree that the father's approval, we're going to talk about the family approval later on as well, but going back to the cultural differences, another thing that I forgot to mention is this. When we say that girls need to be aware of the cultural differences, we're not necessarily talking about the fact that they shouldn't marry a person if the other person is from another place, like another country. What I am talking about is that girls should be aware of these differences.
Yeah.
They should get to know each other's background, like the cultural background of the boy who is from another country, whom the father and the parents of the girl have approved. And we need to know the information about the other person. If everything was going okay, there is no problem, no barrier. Even in Islam, we have no barriers towards marriage. As we had even some tribal positions at the time of our imams for the marriage.
Exactly.
But they disagreed and they took a stand against these kinds of beliefs.
At this very moment, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Yes, it's very important to understand the reality the way it is. It's exactly the thing that we're talking about right in here in today's Muslim Lady. That is, you must get into all the decisions that you make with an open eye. Yes, welcome back. This is Muslim Lady. Sister Nahid and I were talking about different factors that are important for us to make a perfect decision for marriage if we are to get into that decision.
Yeah, after talking about the cultural differences, as you previously mentioned, we need the family approval.
Yeah.
Like, we need our parents, the previous generation who has experienced ups and downs of life to agree with the big decision that the girl or boy, especially the girl with her emotional status, is making. And we need their ideas, we need their cancellation, and we need to take into account what they are considering as important. I guess last month, I heard bad news about one of my friends. Yeah, it was about my friend who is just studying for PhD. She's a successful girl, and I heard that she is divorced. While, yeah, she has a two-year-old son.
Oh,
and
my
it
God.
it was just a big shock for me. But when I talked to her, I asked her for the reasons of this this big shock. She just told me that my education and career goals didn't match my husband's. Like, he disagreed with me going to university a lot. He didn't want me to be in this major. He was okay with just studying, with going to work, but he didn't match my expectations, and I couldn't match his expectations, meet his expectations. From that time, I'm just thinking of this very important factor of career and goal, and goals in like education. Like, we need to know each other's careers well, the education well, and even the goals well. Like, where am I going to be in the next 5 years? Mm-hmm. Is my partner going to agree with me or not?
I think it has got a lot to do with how supportive the other person is going to be.
Yeah, but first of all, their mental ideas, you know, are they even okay with the major I'm studying? Is the person going to be fine with me studying for, I don't know, PhD, not being home for about maybe at least 5 hours a day for studying or work? The one who gets hurt a lot is the girl.
Even if they quit out of love, then it has got nothing to worry about. But then the problem starts when they do this as an obligation.
Yeah.
When they do this as if they have been forced to do it.
Yeah.
And like, if you become a mother and then you quit your job, you would never feel regretful for whatever you did, because that's the thing you did out of love.
Yeah.
But when it comes to force, then the story goes to different directions.
Yeah, and the impacts it will have will never be compensated. Like,
Sure, that's very true.
That's why the next factor I wanted to mention was the education and career goals. We need to get to know each other well. Mm-hmm. We need to just have everything clear between the both of us.
And something, not to forget, just as you were saying, sometimes at the very beginning of their journey into marriage, the boys usually would say that, okay, I will do this, I will do that. They give you promises like in Neverland, the promises that are never going to happen. But then you have to take these things into consideration as well. When you are talking about future, try to be so honest with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Honesty is so important.
And having counselors around, you know, these days we have too many sessions that I've heard they completely analyze each person's mindset and then
You mean to meet a psychologist and then they... I have heard about that as well. Yeah. Then they would draw the tree of their brain, I guess, something like that.
They kind of analyze the person's mindset and
personality.
If they're lying.
And then to recognize if the two of them can match or not.
Yeah, there will be some effects that can never be forgotten.
Exactly. Just let's go for a short break and a change of mood, and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back. Still, you're listening to Muslim Lady. Well, we're talking about different factors to have a perfect marriage. But then I must remind you again of this very point that marriage is a multidimensional issue that would happen in anyone's life. As for girls, since we're talking to ladies and girls out there, the situation might get even worse because us as girls have got this emotional side that goes beyond what every other person sees. So another important factor that I would love to add is to control your emotions, because I see a lot of girls who would just get into marriage with their heart, not with their mind.
That is somehow connected to the emotional maturity.
We discussed that.
Yeah, and we need girls to just be aware of their emotions. When they know their emotions well, again, also we can, you know, these factors are kind of connected to each other. They're like a circle. If you have enough information before marriage, you can control your emotions well because you know yourself and your own nature, like the nature of a girl with her own mindset, with her own brain that is sometimes too emotional.
Exactly.
It's like sometimes the heart decides and even the brain just goes with the flow. And we need to have the information over ourselves to be able to control.
Exactly. It's nothing wrong with being emotional, of course. To decide with your heart is something so lovely. But then, as you just said it, we must take this into consideration that it's the thing that exists between the heart and the mind. And there must be always a balance between these two. Like, we know girls better because we're girls, and we know how it is to live with a heart that goes so wild.
Yeah.
And the last factor.
Yeah, the last, not the least, is the support system. What I'm going to highlight here is somehow related to the problems after marriage. I mean, after the big decisions, because the previous factors were too important. They were the most important factors that were leading to that
after the bygones are the bygones.
Yeah, and here we are mentioning the support system that needs to be there for the couples. Like, are they gonna be supported by the family, by friends?
Yeah, this is very important.
By the community, by the society, even by the country that they are living in. These days we are hearing a lot about the loans for marriage and these kinds of stuff. But still, we can see that sometimes the couples are not supported well.
Just as you brought up the story of support, I do agree. Yes, support is very important. But then let's have a look on the other side of the story as well. There are so many couples who are suffering from this independence issue. Like, if you go to the girl will tell you that my husband is not independent from his parents or family. This is also another important factor. Like, when you are going to marry, the important thing about the other person, I guess, is how independent they are.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, again, going back to the issue of keeping a balance between
exactly.
the two. Like, we're not
moderation.
Saying, exactly. We're not saying that the boy and girl should be, like, separated from their families, like, totally independent.
Exactly.
But what we are seeking is the boy and the girl having their own status in their own world at the same time, being still connected to the community, to friends and to family.
Yeah.
We really need this support system for them to be prepared, to be thought about, to be logical. Because, sometimes it's not about the boy not keeping the balance between life and, parents. Sometimes it's even the parents' issue. Like, they're not keeping the balance. They're just making the boy or girl be too much dependent on them. So we need it like a system, like a way that keeps everything in at a normal level.
Try to have this in mind that you must keep your expectations as low as possible. Now, this is not unfortunate to say it. I guess this is reality. This is facing the reality. Sometimes we just build castles in the air and we forget about the very fact that life is a real thing in a common world. So just try to have a clear vision of this world and how it works and how human beings are. Do not think of the other person as this angel who's coming from heaven, doing no mistakes, doing no wrong thing. They have no wrong attitude. No, it's not like that. And life is never a peachy pinky story sort of a thing. So thank you, Sister Nahid, for contributing in here in today's episode. And thank you to our listeners. I hope you enjoyed it, dear ladies. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Imam Khomeini said, "The racist Zionist regime has always been a source of discord among regional states."
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulema, that are Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In that episode of the Ramadan special series, we are going to speak about sensitivity towards sin, indecency and evil deeds with a look at Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah of the Noble Quran. Stay with us, please. Among the characteristics that God likes very much, and every faithful should have it, is غيرات, which means sensitivity towards evil and sin. According to a hadith, God likes غيرات among the faithful. غيرات means strong defense of dignity, face, family, religion, property, and country. This sensitivity acts like a vigilant police in the spirit of human being, guarding red lines and boundaries. It urges us to be alert against evil acts and sin. A hadith from the Prophet's sixth infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, reads, "Allah assigned two angels to punish a city. The people of the city were very rude and immoral. They felt no regret for their sins and did not give up their evil deeds. Allah sent them to raise the city to the ground. They saw a worshipper among the people who was praying, crying, and supplicating. One of the angels told the other, 'Let us go and ask him again.' The other angel said, 'Do your duty.' The first one said, 'Perhaps the command has changed as the man may have repented. Wait so that I ask for our duty again.' So that angel went back and asked Allah, as he had seen a worshipper among the people. Allah said, the duty is the same. Go to the city and destroy it. Then Allah added, it is true that this man is engaged in worship and prayer, but he's never upset and angry with the sin of others, and disrespect to the divine laws, and his face didn't change. He has no religious sensitivity. The sensitivity of persons towards belief and religion is inevitable. The deeper is one's belief in his religion, the more sensitive he will be toward religion. The opposite of religious sensitivity is compromise and coming short on religious red lines and principles. This is called pliability and indifference. A sensitive person cannot tolerate insulting of divine laws, principles, and sanctities. When God obligates something, he wants it to be done. As we said in the beginning of this episode, Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah is somehow related to this issue. Nor is there any blame on those to whom, when they came to you to provide them with a mount, you said, I do not find any mount for you. They turned back while their eyes were flowing with tears, grieved because they did not find any means to spend. Those faithful had no means for jihad, but religious sensitivity made them very upset and they cried in grief. Today some people insist on ignoring of religious values and principles, saying, in the modern time we shouldn't be sensitive and rigid towards values. We should endure all tastes, ideas, and behaviors and give them chance to show themselves. The pliable people think that if person does an indecent act in public, insults sanctities, writes profanities, we should not react. They argue that not everybody thinks the same in society and everyone have their own idea. So, if we want to live comfortably, we have to tolerate them. They even attribute their justification to some Quranic ayahs. For instance, they mention Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah, part of which reads, Allah desires ease for you, and He does not desire hardship for you. They also resort to Ayah 21 of Surah Al-Ghashiyah. So admonish for you are only an admonisher. But these people should be asked as what is their opinion on Ayah 19 of Surah Ali Imran, part of which reads, indeed, with Allah, religion is Islam. Or what do they think about Ayah 73 of Surah Tawbah, part of which reads, O Prophet, wage jihad against the faithless and the hypocrites, and be severe with them. We should not forget that tolerance and taking easy of religious laws not only is accepted, but also it is the origin of religion. And if taking easy means to spread Islam through argument and logical debate, it is correct. Yet, one cannot come short and be indifferent against affront towards religious values. We read in history that a delegation came to the Prophet and told him, we will pay allegiance to you with three conditions. We will not perform daily ritual prayer. We will not break our idols ourselves. And let the idol Lot to remain for 1 year so that we can worship it. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, there is no use in the religion that has no bowing and prostration. As for breaking of your idols, If you don't want to break them, we will break them. But on worshipping of Lot, I will never give you such a permission. Sure, the prophet stood firmly against their excessive and illogical demands and rejected them. It has also been narrated on the revelation of Surah Kafirun that chiefs of polytheists came up to the prophet and told him, O Muhammad, you obey your religion so that we obey yours and make you our partner in all our privileges. You worship our deities for 1 year and the following year we will worship your God. The messenger of mercy told them, I take refuge with God that I may ascribe and associate to him. Then the prophet came to the sacred mosque after the revelation of this surah and told the chiefs of polytheists, O you the faithless, I will never worship what you worship.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Your headlines, the International Medical